Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Michael Grubb, who is Professor of Energy and Climate Change at the Institute for Sustainable Resources at the Bartlett Faculty at the University College London, and Malcolm Key, who is Senior Research Fellow at the OIES. This is the second podcast on the subject of electricity redesign and split markets with Michael and Malcolm. And today we're specifically going to emphasise and discuss the split market approach and possible adoption by Europe. Well, Michael, let me come to you because I'd like to address the split market approach in a bit more detail, if I may. And many experts criticise the split market approach for undermining efficient merit order dispatch and for encouraging inefficient arbitrage between the split markets. You know, what would you say in response?
That's a comment I struggle to understand, to be honest. So first of all, if we've got substantial amounts of renewables or nuclear, they will want to dispatch first. They will want to operate when they're available, and that is highly economic efficient. That is merit order operation. Green power pool would change nothing in that. So, because obviously it would still be dispatching. As I say, it reflects the economics of the contracts with the renewables that are feeding into the green power pool. But that is the question that touched early on around what are the terms of those generators. That's nothing to do with whether or not you bundle their output in a green power pool. As for the idea that a green power pool and our version of this would encourage inefficient arbitrage, well, what do we make of the crisis last year? And as I alluded, many billions of pounds being made flowing to generators whose costs hadn't changed at all. Where I think issues of arbitrage do come down is if you start by simply saying, here's a pool of electricity with a known more stable cost, then obviously downstream, some people might seek to arbitrage selling those contracts on, which is why, at least in initial variations, you probably need a form of franchised suppliers or targeted consumers, so that they couldn't be arbitraged downstream from basically selling cheap electricity to the highest bidder downstream. But that's already happening upstream, so I'm not quite sure what the big problem is that people think is created by the green power pool.
So do you think the split market approach, Michael, you know, works better and is more likely to be adopted in a kind of island system such as the Great Britain, Ireland, and Iberia, than in systems that are more integrated, such as Germany and the surrounding countries?
Well, I think with, first of all, any significant reform to a system, one thing I've learned is it's a good idea if you don't try and carry it out on the whole world at the same time, because we will absolutely learn. There are many things that we'll learn along the way about the appropriate interfaces and so forth. Interconnection, a high scale of interconnection would complicate the design of this form of dual markets. So in that sense, yes, it would be a lot easier to launch it for the British electricity market than across the whole of the EU. But also, frankly, it's clear in the EU, major reforms do take longer. They are harder. There are many differences between the different member states. Some are looking with interest to the UK debate, thinking, well, actually, we know we have a problem with this complete intermingling of two radically different sorts of electricity systems. If the UK is on a path of electricity market reform and can take some steps towards disentangling them in a sensible way, that sure will be of wider international interest.
Now, how do you envisage the split markets working in a system with dispatchable hydro and other kinds of storage? You know, which of the two markets would it operate in? And do you envisage assets being allowed to, say, move back and forward between the markets?
So, by and large, generators would self-select which markets were appropriate. So, let's give a really simple example. Actually, if you're a gas generator, you want to be in the wholesale market, because it's your generation that largely sets the price of electricity. Therefore, you are self-hedged against the risks. As we have seen, you may well get extra profits as well. If you are looking at investing £1 billion or more in an offshore wind farm, you really don't want to be in a market where the price is very volatile and set by something that has nothing to do with your own costs. So you would want to be in the green power pool side, particularly if it had some element of underwriting of the kind that we have with CFDs. You're right. The question is really interesting for storage. My view is they should self-select. I think actually what you would see is some of the big renewable generators probably would want to invest in some location of large-scale storage so that they can generate for more of the time if they're subject to some of those price-related signals, which ultimately, of course, they will have to be. But I think the majority of storage probably would be playing in more directly in the flexible market or located at points of end use, saying, great, we've got a two-tier contract. We've got a certain amount of electricity at the cost of renewables, or the long-run marginal cost of the renewables. But we also have a much more volatile price, and we want the flexibility to help us respond to that. So downstream, it's not a question of which market are they playing in. It's they're responding to the conjoined price signals.
Well, Malcolm, you sat quietly while Michael's given us his views on the split market approach. You know, what's your view? Any comments you'd like to make?
Well, to a large extent, I agree with what Michael said, and the sort of points he's made, I think, apply equally to the approach that David Robinson and I have suggested. So I don't think these problems are nearly as great as some people have suggested. I would just say, particularly in relation to the island system question, that I think the argument is not so much that this is only relevant to island systems, but that the need for change is felt much more intensely in island systems. And we've seen that in the UK. We've moved very far in terms of the penetration of intermittent renewables in the UK. We have rather little hydro, rather limited interconnection. So the pressure to change the market structure is felt more keenly. And we've seen that in the responses to the consultation, where most people agree that some sort of change is needed, even if they can't agree on what precise change. In Europe, it's a bit less acute, the problem. Europe as a whole has moved less in terms of the penetration of intermittent renewables. It has more options like hydro and so on. But also, there is much more political commitment to a single price in a single electricity market in Europe, because that's one of the achievements of Europe in terms of electricity markets. And I think you can see from the recent European consultation, there's a very great reluctance to consider major changes. But the fact is, Europe is moving the same way, and it is quite likely that over time, the same pressures will be felt and that the need for further change will be apparent.
Well, Michael, you know, everyone agrees that the international electricity trade will be an important element of the future system, and, you know, significant new interconnections are being developed. So my question is, how would trade take place under your proposals? You know, would it require other European countries to adopt the same approach, which, you know, potentially seems unlikely given the state of debate in Europe?
Been around long enough to know that European debates move slowly, but they do move. So I am not going to rule out the EU continuing forever to fail to deal with the fundamental difference between these different kinds of electricity systems. They're going to have to confront it sooner or later. We already see a split, frankly, amongst European countries around this question about marginal cost pricing on all of the current design, as opposed to saying, can we disentangle these signals and costs in a more sensible way? In terms of the interconnection flows, the default would be that interconnectors are a variable generator that would be contributing to the wholesale market. But of course, it would be open for parties to actually strike deals based upon the long-run marginal cost based upon renewable energy and have those contracts as reflected into the green power pool side of things, the renewable side of the market. that would be a choice they would have to bring to, if we had, for example, a structure like this in the UK, they would have to bring to the UK market as to which market would they be feeding into. Let me just flag one other quite important aspect of this whole set of issues, which is around carbon. Because there is, frankly, a very complex and convoluted debate at the moment about how carbon intensive is electricity? How carbon intensive is your electricity demand? And again, it's, well, are we talking about at the margin, or are we talking about the average, or are we talking about a contract with specific generators? This is going to become a massive issue, the European Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. If they're buying goods from China, was it made with the carbon average carbon intensity? Was it made with a coal plant? Was it made with one of the new Chinese offshore renewables? They're radically different carbon intensities. Under the current system, there's no obvious way of answering what carbon intensity should you use. If you have a green power pool type structure, or you have a renewables pool or a dual markets, whatever we call that, then it's very clear. If it's contracting with that, and there was sufficient renewables at the time of generation, that was legitimate zero carbon electricity, and you have all of the market structures and monitoring processes around it that you know. And it enables consumers to say, we want to buy green, and therefore we want to contract with that type of electricity. The same goes for interconnector flows as for other traded goods. You have actual recognition that low carbon electricity is different in many ways, including the tracing of carbon through for people who want to buy clean and green. That's another aspect of consumer demand that the current structure actually fails to exploit. It disempowers consumers. I mean, let's face it, how many of us know people who are on green tariffs, thought they were buying renewables, and last year discovered they were actually paying the cost of gas? That is a signal there's something seriously wrong with the system.
Malcolm, I'm going to come back to you, if I can, and give you the kind of final words in the podcast. What are your views on what Michael's just said, and indeed other things raised in the podcast?
Well, I'd certainly agree with the picture Michael paints. As far as trade is concerned, it's clear that arrangements would have to be made to trade between systems or organisations with different electricity market designs. But I'd just add that trade usually finds a way. The UK still trades post-Brexit with Europe. Indeed, trade is increasing with all the new interconnections being built. It may not be quite as simple and quite as efficient as when we were in Europe, but it is possible. And in relation, for instance, to the point Michael was making about carbon prices, there have been times when the European carbon price has been significantly below the UK carbon price. Trade has still taken place. There are some distortions introduced by that, but these are on the whole manageable. And I think the arguments for trade are so strong that people would find a way through these problems. And I wouldn't be particularly worried about the difficulty of international trade in future, because I agree with Michael that in the end, I think everyone's going to have to go down the same route and introduce a distinction between the two markets. And I hope that's the major message that can come out of this podcast.
Michael and Malcolm, thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation. It builds on the messages from the article Disentangling the Debate on Energy Redesign and Split Markets that was published in the Institute's May 2023 Oxford Energy Forum, a publication titled Electricity Market Design During the Energy Transition and Energy Crisis. Now, in this podcast, as I said earlier, we also discussed elements of the June 2017 paper, the Decarbonised Electricity System for the Future, the Two Markets Approach. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.